we're going to make a leap in time to music from the 1990s and onwards, so I'm not going to talk about funk or R&B or action today. I'll focus instead on how different media used in the production and distribution of music influence the sound of recordings. And my paper is called Media Signatures and Digital Technology in Contemporary Popular Music. The paper is based on work that I'm undertaking at the University of Oslo together with a colleague of mine called, his name is Arnt Moser. So when I say we are going to investigate and things like that, it's actually because it's two of us that have been that have done this work. And unfortunately, I have to read because English is not my first language, and I think you prefer that I read in English rather than speak in Norwegian. Well, mediating technology is considered a central and defining trait of popular music, pointing to a state before or outside of this mediation, a state of raw or original sound, makes no sense here. In principle, this is true of all music genres, since no music is unmediated. The acoustic surroundings of music mediate it in different ways. I mean, a large church hall and a room for chamber music are different sonic media. However, while a classical musical recording is dominated by the principle of fidelity, the role of mediating technologies in popular music is different on at least two counts. First, the recording is the primary medium for popular music, and the introduction of certain mediating technologies has thus delimited the field of popular music in the sense that they are part of the origin of the field itself. Second, there is a sophisticated tradition for highlighting, playing with, and commenting on mediating technologies within popular music practices. And in this paper, I will investigate how the concrete sound of a recording process behind a pop tune relate to the possibilities and constraints of its electronic media. In particular, I seek a more nuanced understanding of the specific role of digital media used for music production and music distribution. After a brief presentation of some issues related to the question of mediation and materiality, I will address the claim that digitization erases the material aspects of mediation. Through an analysis of the sound and also the silence of the Madonna song Don't Tell Me from the album Music, it's from 2000, as well as in a handful of related examples, I will argue that one can indeed identify specific oral qualities associated with digital sound, and that these qualities may be used to achieve different aesthetic effects, as well as to shed light on mediation and the medium as such. Often one hears the claim that digitized media lose the qualities associated with the process of recording and distribution when compared with the mediation or reproduction processes of analog media. In their eulogy to the phonograph, media researchers Eric Rothenboller and John Durham Peters join those who draw a sharp distinction between analog and digital media. In Rothenboller and Peters' view, digital sound can be reproduced without any generational loss and played back without any signs of wear and tear over time. In contrast, the playback of analog records, they say, and I quote, audibilizes two histories, one of the recording and one of the record. The data encoded on the CD do not mix with the history of the disc. They can be obscured by dirt and scratches, but dirt and scratches cannot sound from a CD player. As the history of records speaks while they are being played, they thus invite us to think about the passage of time. By contrast, CDs obscure it. Unquote. Clearly, the history of an LP becomes part of its sound. The question is, however, do digital recordings offer something similar? Madonna's song Don't Tell Me uses a familiar pop and rock format. The instrumentation is modeled on the traditional lead vocal with a band, and the form of the song is binary with verse and chorus and so on. We could even say that contrary to the sound and texture of much contemporary dance music, which is almost unthinkable without recent technological developments, Don't Tell Me could have resulted from analog tape recording techniques or even a live performance. The song's medium or mode of production and reproduction, however, plays an important part in both its musical and its cultural significance. And I'll play you the beginning of the song. And there was no sound. Striking material traces of mediation on this track is the use of what we've called digital dropouts. The effect mimics a CD player having problems reading the information on the disc, which can happen with a dirty or a scratched CD or a worn-out laser. In both cases, the effect is indeed caused by wear and tear, and the result may be understood as an index of use in the sense reserved by Rothenbuehler and Peters for analog playback alone. As long as we believe that the digital silence is an error of technology, it is being interpreted as what my colleague Arndt Mosse and myself have named medium silence. In contrast to planned performative or scripted silence, which we call textural silence, medium silence is typically non-intentional and even considered a major taboo, as with dead air in commercial broadcasting. It may, however, also be used for aesthetic purposes, as is clearly the case in Madonna's Don't Tell Me, where the CD as a digital medium and the possibilities of digital dropout are exploited right from the beginning of the song. And I should probably add here that we might hear this differently today, because it's already 8 years since this song was released. And the effect, of course, when you hear the song repeatedly, the effect changes. Well, when the subsequent silent pauses begin to form a rhythmic pattern in a steady temporal flow, the framework changes and we hear the seemingly random digital dropouts as a highly meaningful device, rhythmically and otherwise. In other words, it soon becomes clear that the presence of digital dropouts on this track is not a sign of a worn-out or broken medium. After this, what we might call category shift from medium silence to textual silence has taken place, however, the effect of the dropout still plays on the initial similarity between the two, continuing to signify a form of digital weariness. This connotation only gradually fades away as the effect of the digital dropout becomes less conspicuous until it mimics a more or less neutral and almost purely musical pause. The sound production of Don't Tell Me is not unique in displaying the signature of its mediating technologies. Another distinctive artist employing similar techniques from the same time period is Square Pusher, the performing pseudonym of British electronic music artist Thomas Jenkinson. In My Red Hot Car, it's from the album Go Plastic, also from it's from 2001. The presence of digital music technologies leaps out from the very first bar. And I'll play a little bit of my red hot car. Feel of the program, quantized rhythm tracks, and processed voice are the first signs of digital mediation on this track. The most striking sign, however, occurs in the middle section of the song, which I just played, where Jenkinson explores the possibilities of digital editing via an extensive montage of chopped out sonic material. The use of silence in this case, though, is quite distinct from Don't Tell Me. While we clearly hear the silent bursts as digital silences, in my red hot car, they never resonate as medium silences, but wholly as textual ones. The musical silence here represents a playful processing of digitized sound rather than a digital dropout of the medium itself. And the pauses are neutral gaps between the sounds in kind of negatives in the rhythmic pattern. They are no less important for this, of course, and lend the song its specifically contemporary feel through their clear display of a digital signature. Another example of a band that has explored media signatures in their music is the British Bristol-based trip-hop band Portishead. Instead of letting the act of mediation remain transparent, Portishead almost always foregrounds their mediating technologies, impacting both the sound and the meaning of their music. And I'll also play a little excerpt from a song by Portishead called Undenied. Portishead play on absolute digital silence versus noisy vinyl silence. As Mark Katz and others have pointed out, vinyl noise, real or digitally simulated, is now firmly part of our modern sonic vocabulary and can be powerfully evocative. The song Undenied is in fact marked by continuous vinyl noise, but this is interrupted at two key moments. When its absence, revealing then the digital silence enveloping the musical sounds, intensifies the emotional tension and the charged, trembling voice of singer Beth Gibbons. In Katz's view, this phonograph effect, as he calls it, first became a valued and meaningful sound when digital technology eliminated it. However, as pointed out above, even though digital mediation is literally noiseless, there are other forms of noise that display the signature of the digital medium. New digital technological means rely on established cultural modes, and the appropriation of new technology happens within the framework of existing values and practices, not in a cultural vacuum. Part of this cultural framework is a persistent faith in the transparency of contemporary media that can be linked to narratives of progress and innovation underlying the story of new technology within modernity. This faith is not limited to the present, of course. As Joseph Horner points out, old technologies often connote authenticity, warmth, or wholeness, while the framing contemporary mechanisms that mediate these old sounds remain inaudible. From the pre-digital era, he points to Pink Floyd's montage of old and new media on the album Wish You Were Here from 1975, and on this album in the transition between the song Have a Cigar and the title song Wish You Were Here, the poor noisy sound of an old distribution medium, an AM transistor radio, is contrasted with the crisp, intimate sound of the new technology of that time, namely home stereo equipment, which was also heard as being almost transparent. And I'll just play this transition, the transition between these two songs for you. Today we hear this differently because we can today hear the analog medium that perhaps at the time was experienced as transparent, I mean the home stereo equipment, the sound that we ended up with in this little excerpt. And we might therefore ask why digital audio is necessarily a particularly strong candidate for what we might call transparency forever. At some point in time, will not digital audio come across as dated dated or obsolete as well? Perhaps, as Horner suggests, we are trained to overlook the limitations of current technology at any point in time and to believe its promises of transparency and fidelity. Nor is this training simply a matter of the cultural industry pulling a veil over the eyes or ears of innocent consumers. It's also a matter of our senses and meaning-making skills becoming gradually aware of the small artifacts of new forms of mediation and production. The hiss of an FM tuner, the hum of analog stereos, the edit points of samples in a loop, the quantization noise in lossy data compression, and so on. Thus, when home stereo equipment filled our living rooms toward the end of the 1970s, this medium was thought to leave no mark on the content of the music it played. Although we may today notice the analog noise accompanying Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here, when the album was released, we did not hear the medium in this way. The home stereo equipment, or FM stereo radio, supposed to bring us this magnificent, impressive contemporary production, remained transparent. While listeners were certainly aware of the phonograph effect before the era of digitization, the crackling of vinyl was, in Rothenbiller and Peter's words, most obviously related to the history of the record or the distribution medium, and less to the recording or the production medium. Madonna's Don't Tell Me reminds us about the possibility of the former also in digital mediation, while Portishead, Square Pushers, and others primarily addresses the possibility of the latter. Common to them all are the different signs of what the Norwegian musicologist Ragnhild Brøvig Andersen has named opaque mediation, and the use of digital effects as digital effects. Such material traces of digital mediation become gradually more opaque as listeners grow accustomed to them, and at the same time they lose some of their aesthetic effect as new attention-grabbing technological devices. In the future, we might thus not only talk about the phonograph effect, but also the digital effect. Perhaps we might also mourn its passing. Thank you. Yeah, it's getting late. I don't know.
Any questions
or comments?
Do you find that more of this in European music than in American music?
Yeah, I guess the music developing out of the British, the British scene in the 1960s, and I mean, especially what we could call the art school music scene, might be inclined to expose mediation to a higher degree. But you can also find it in a lot of contemporary R&B. But it's a little bit dependent on the genre. It's more common in some styles and some genres than others. I guess it's.
Have you noticed a correlation between what appears to be sort of about a 20 or 25 year nostalgia cycle and the appearance of these effects, which I assume is largely because of both the musicians drawing upon their early childhood nostalgia and, of course, their audiences responding to it? You know, whether it's Pink Floyd bringing back their early World War II radio memories or. These are like digital representations of a lot of what kids 25 years ago were going to hear with early hip hop and scratching.
Yeah.
Except they're digitally produced instead of with a turntable.
Yeah, I've never thought about it as a nostalgia cycle, but of course, especially in Portishead's music, the nostalgia is very present, I would say. They kind of they include a lot of references to what they might have heard as their parents' music and their parents' culture. So it's, definitely one of the themes that is brought up by these kind of aesthetic practices. Mm. I don't know who's next. Okay. Yeah?
Like, I can remember a popular song in the middle 1940s, it was called Broken Record, where the lyrics included, you were listening to the song and they encountered, and the lyrics played as if the record was broken, or it really wasn't broken. It would skip or stick, and would play, and repeat the line over and over again as it went through the
Oh, that's interesting.
And another one was Genie the Magic Record, where for children's record, you flip the record over, a little kid would flip it over, and the first remark was that Genie, who was Peter Lynn Hayes, was saying, "Ooh, that fuzz on the phonograph needle tickles, like you forgot to clean off the needle before you drop the needle on the second side of the record, you know."
Oh, that's amazing example. You can write them down.
Yeah, I grew up with that record, so I know.
Yeah, it was. Thank you.
We can throw it open to questions for the rest of the panel. Two questions, if already. If not, thank you for the nicest youngsters on this panel.